Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, hour number two here on Teak and Tierney. Company for the Teak and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios, who understand it's not just a mortgage, but it's your mortgage. That's the difference. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage, and get the keyboard away from KD. Take the devices out of his hands. KD's got a little too much time on his hands. Come on, Kev. Although, to be fair, Kevin got pulled into this one with Big Perk. Oh, man. This is back-to-back days for Kevin Durant with the Twitter situation, the social media situation. If you missed this, and I'll do this briefly because at this point in the day, if you care about it, there's a pretty good chance you didn't miss it. So I don't want to just drone on and on about stuff you already know. Basically, is the bottom line, Perkins was interacting with a media member, all right? I believe from Boston. And Perkins basically said, you know, Durant lost in the second round. And he referenced, you know, without Russ, when Perkins played with Kevin Durant at OKC. And then, just, you know, and then also, of course, this finds Kevin Durant. Now, did he? No, Perkins did not throw in Kevin Durant's Twitter handle. So, again, Kevin Durant is either feverishly searching his name or somebody is snitching, saying, yo, KD, somebody's hitting you up again on social media, which is what they did with me. All right. Then he jumps in. And let's give Kevin Durant credit. He ain't afraid to jump in. He jumps in. You know, sometimes, you know, this is – Still, if I go off a diving board, I still hold my nose. I don't know why. Do you do that too, D-Cell? You don't? Samantha, do you? Yeah, I still hold my nose. This guy goes in feet first, face first, back first, doesn't hold his nose. Kevin Durant jumps right into the pool, the social media pool. And he writes, yeah. So now Durant's unhappy about what Perk said, how they did without Russell Westbrook. And I get it. It's a sensitive nerve. Yes. And our starting center, and this is Durant, at Kendrick Perkins, averaged a whopping 2-3, 2 points and 3 boards during the series. You played hard, though, champ. LOL. Now he's just kind of like, you know, like whatever, man. You know, you had 2-3. Just get back in your hole. If I can read Kevin Durant's mind. And again, I would never even remotely imply that to Big Perk. Get back in your hole. Start a beef with, are you nuts? All right, so then it goes on. And now Kendrick Perkins starts going in deep. He goes, boy, stop. You did the, he's pulling the card. You did the weakest move in NBA history with 3 exclamation points up on a team. And we've talked about this. This is a part of Kevin Durant's history. Up 3-1 of the Western Conference Finals and then go join them the following season. Heart of a champion right there. Big Perk's presence has been felt big time. But as you would imagine, Durant's not done, and Durant's got to clap back as he is wont to do. And Durant writes, weak is starting. Yeah, I mean, this is really a soap opera. Weak is starting at center, playing real minutes with no production. Should have worked on your skills as much as I did. Huh? It's a good shot. All right. Now, to be fair, Perkins was pretty much past his prime by the time he got to Oklahoma City. And he lost any bounce after he ripped up his knee during the 2010 NBA Finals, his ACL. Not that Perk was ever going to really, you know, he wasn't Kevin Garnett bouncy, but he certainly was a little more viable than when Kevin Durant had him, right? And then Kendrick Perkins isn't done either, based on the assertion of no production from Durant. Perkins says, that's fine. You worked that hard and still, he's going for the card again, had to go and join a 73-9 team. Truth be told, he's going real low here. You don't even feel like a real champ. You have a hard time sleeping at night knowing you took the coward way out. Woof. The coward way out. Now, at that point, to my knowledge, crickets from Kevin Durant. I don't think he responded to that one. You know what's interesting about this, too? you know, this whole social media thing, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But put that aside for one moment, all right? What's beginning to happen, and this was illuminated last night in Oklahoma City, the affection, the unadulterated love, the passion, the connection that the OKC fans, and we knew that they would do this, so quickly showered Russell Westbrook with. I mean, really, Kevin Durant's the complete antithesis. He's loathed out there. Like, they think he's, I mean, hey, you left us and you're the enemy and we're not prepared to let bygones be bygones. This cat hung around for 10 years and, you know, 11, whatever it was, and willed us to the playoffs every year, won an MVP. You know, we're not saying he's better than you. Which, by the way, to be fair to Perkins, what he said, most of the origin was about the Mr. Thunder reference, and then things started going from there. I can make the distinction. You can be Mr. Thunder or Mr. Whomever, but not be the better player. Nobody in their right mind that knows basketball thinks Kevin Durant's better than Russell Westbrook. Nobody. I mean, nobody. And I don't think deep down Perk thinks that. But Perkins, by calling him Mr. Thunder, is again showing Durant right now is a legend without a home. He's a legend without a home. Name one NBA superstar in the history of the game. I mean a true legend. Not a fringe all-star. A legend, as Durant so clearly is, that doesn't really have a home. OKC can't stand him. They want nothing to do with him. I don't blame them. If I'm a Thunder fan, I'm feeling the same way, and that's not changing. If I'm a Warriors fan, I got love for Kevin. Of course I got love. He won me two NBA Finals, and he's, you know, two NBA MVPs along the way. But he's not ours. We got our guys. It wasn't organic. You know, we got Steph. We got Clay. It's nice to have the embarrassment of riches, like when the Yankees got A-Rod or, you know, other situations over the years. You know, you got you, whether it's a mercenary move, not that Durant's, I mean, the money is the money, so not a mercenary move, but, I mean, it was a shortcut to a chip. Let's call it for what it was. It was a shortcut to a championship to change the narrative about Kevin Durant, and that's his right, and he delivered. But he's not Steph Curry. So, yeah, he's got a home in Golden State, you know, with the Warriors, but ... And now you're kicking forward to the Brooklyn Nets. All right, what did he sign, a four-year deal? What KD signed? I think it was four, right? 4 years. The first year he's not playing, understandably so. Rehabbing the ruptured Achilles, most devastating injury to a pro athlete, especially, you know, somebody that relies on burst and bounce and start and stops. He signs a four-year, $164 million max deal with Kyrie. And listen, Kevin Durant can say whatever he wants. I truly believe that that injury changed his destination. If Kevin Durant was healthy, I believe he would have tackled the Knicks. And Kyrie Irving would have followed him rather than Kevin Durant following Kyrie. I can't prove it. No need to belabor it. That's what's in my heart. And by the way, that's what's been intimated from people who know, or at least have a working sense of what the thought process was leading up to the to the free agent decision. So next year, year two of the four-year contract with the Nets, Kevin Durant's going to be 32 off a ruptured ligament that goes from the middle of his calf all the way down to the back of his bone in his foot. That is a long tendon that rolled up like a lampshade. Dominique Wilkins came back from it. Not many others have. So my point is, and I even tweeted this at Kevin. You know, he may have taken the low road on one or two things. I wasn't about to do that. I said, I sincerely wish you well, man. The NBA's a lot better. When I'm watching the NBA and I'm watching NBA highlights as I do every night, I enjoy seeing Kevin Durant drop 35 because Kevin Durant's unbelievable. And he's the most unique, most explosive, best offensive weapon in the history of the NBA. And I've said that for years. But the ultimate point that I want to get back to, name another NBA legend that doesn't quite have a place to call home. I can't think of any. And it doesn't make it wrong. It just complicates not even his legacy, but just how he's perceived, or I guess that adds up to legacy for some. But, Mike, you know what I'm saying? Think about the greatest names in NBA history. And, yeah, listen, Jordan spent a couple years with the Wizards, whatever. Will Chamberlain, Will played for a couple different franchises. But I don't know. I mean, name any. Shaq played for a couple of different teams for sure. But Shaq's got a little bit of a complex legacy. But because the Magic were so early in their infancy, their formative stage, I think Shaq's going to get a lot more love in Orlando now than Kevin Durant's ever going to get in Oklahoma City. That's for sure. You know, Laker fans love him, and Heat fans love him. The other teams, who cares? It doesn't matter. Phoenix, Celtics, Cavs, whatever. Bird, Celtics, Magic, Lakers, Jordan, Bulls, you know? LeBron? Well, you could say LeBron, but, you know, LeBron brought the championship to the city that hadn't had one for 60 years. So once they get past the wound, that is still healing, admittedly, that he left them twice, Cavalier fans, especially the further they get removed from being relevant, and we'll get to the Beeline stuff in a moment, that ties into Shaq, they're going to say, man, kid from Akron brought us a chip. He actually did do it. And that angst or that disconnect, I think, will come full circle and will eventually come back to love and appreciation and admiration. And you'll hear it the night they retire LeBron's jersey in Cleveland, which will obviously happen. So, again, I've heard no names. You know, and it's just very unique. It's a bit of a – it's becoming a bit – and the other thing, too, I don't think the Nets are his last stop. That's – you know, now. Could things change if he ever went back to Oklahoma City? Yeah, but at that point, he'll be mid-30s, and would he be able to really alter the franchise, you know, path like he was when he was first there? Probably not. Although LeBron's in his mid-30s, and he's still a beast. Can he go back to the Warriors? Sure. I mean, anything's possible. Can he play 9 or 10 years with the Nets and win the Nets a championship? Sure. That's possible as well. Well, 9 or 10 years seems a bit ambitious, but you get the point. 6, 7 years, greater part of a decade. You know, bring the first championship to Brooklyn, bring the first one to the Nets outside of the ABA, because they made it twice with Jay Kidd. They lost twice. So, you know, Kevin Durant has had an interesting couple of days. I get the sense that Kevin Durant is getting a little anxious to get back on the court. He's a little bored. And I don't blame him. You know, you're an NBA player making $40-something million a year, and all you have to really do with your day is rehab. That's a pretty lonely existence. I get it, you know. But this was an interesting twist last night with Kendrick Perkins. And I think Shannon Sharpe said today with Skip, I think he said on their show, as I paraphrase, but basically along the lines of, yeah, man, what Perk said, 95% of the NBA thinks. And you know, no matter how Kevin Durant deflects or goes at people, mostly in a positive, fun engagement on social media, you know, in jest, just like in vino, there's truth. You sit down, you make fun of somebody, generally there's a little something serious behind it. You sit down, you have a bottle of wine with somebody, generally you go to a point of conversation where the truth maybe comes up a little quicker or a little more without apologies than it would be if there's no wine. We know those expressions. And, you know, I think deep down, Kevin Durant knows that this is how most people in the NBA feel, and he can't run from it. The only thing he could do is hope that his boy, Kyrie, holds up and is healthy. Because here's the other thing. Without Kyrie Irving, you know, I mean, Kevin Durant's a one-man show in his early to mid-30s. And I say without Kyrie Irving, Kyrie's already missed 30 games almost this year. And Kyrie's history is one of intermittent interruptions in his career. You know, every year is a little something, going back to his 1 year at Duke, where he played 11 or 13 games. So are we supposed to think that as Kyrie gets older and deeper into his career, that he's going to, you know, regenerate quicker and he's going to be healthier? No, that's illogical. Nobody gets healthier with age. They get worse. So that was pretty interesting. So was what Shaq said last night. I want to get into that coming up next here. The John Beilein situation with the Cavaliers, thankfully, sensibility is winning out. But Shaq and Sir Charles waded into the waters last night. We'll break down what they said, and I'll tell you if I agree. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line on this Friday around the country here on Tiki and Tierney. who's hot, who's not, is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way to save a little money. Just switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, save 15% or more in car insurance. Hey, coming up next, Taj Boyd, who really got it. Taj Boyd's a name you kind of forget in Clemson football lore. Not if you're a Clemson fan, obviously. Taj Boyd was a beast. I mean, Taj Boyd put up some big-time numbers, former Clemson Tigers quarterback. So he's going to join me coming up next and talk about the championship game on Monday, Battle of the Tigers. We'll get to it. A couple of great quarterbacks, great programs. So Taj will join me coming up next here on the show. I want to get to this. Teague and I spent a lot of time on this, a couple of segments, the John Beilein situation with the Cavaliers. And, you know, sometimes you just, you know, I see some of these stories and I'm like, oh, man. You just hope that sensibility wins out because you know that sometimes it could get off the tracks and a good person can lose control of, I don't want to say of their life, but in a lot of ways of the way their life is perceived. I mean, people who have no sense of the type of human being John Beilein is begin to parachute in with, not everybody, clearly, and for the most part, I think people were smart about this. But, you know, dangerous, reckless, and not just John Beilein, but others. You know, like an arsonist view. You know, they drop a hot take, and hey, just don't worry about repercussions. That's social media for you. And I watch, I reference, listen, one thing I have no problem referencing other shows on our show. You know, I'm not foolish enough to think that there's only Tiki and Tierney and nobody else out there. I'm a consumer of my industry. I truly am. I wake up. And I like to see what other shows are doing. I like to see what they're doing right. I like to see what they're doing wrong. I like to get a sense of, you know, what they're leading with, you know, because they're starting a show before we are. I'll watch Get Up. I'll watch a little bit of Shannon and Skip. I'll obviously watch my guy Stephen A. and Max on First Take. Obviously watch the news. It's a rotation. It's a cycle to see what people are thinking, all right, and what people are saying and where I think I can maybe add a little – certainly intellect, but a little a different perspective, so it's not a regurgitation of what you heard earlier in the day. And the Beilein stuff for me was very, very easy, all right? If you missed it, the 20-second synopsis is he was going over film. He used the word thug, meant to use the word slug. He was pointing out something favorable in the film session because, as we know, the Cavaliers aren't very good this year. They're 10-27. He has long lamented a lack of energy. And in trying to point out to his very young team during film session, you know, and let's face it, you know, when you're 60-something years old, slug, the word slug with S-L, not T-H, slug, is a part of your verbiage on some level. Slug just represents like a slow moving force without any sort of direction or energy or purpose, you know? And just think of the animal, the actual slug. I mean, is it just kind of plows through? So I completely exonerated him. Now, I didn't know what the court of public opinion would do. And quite frankly, it doesn't really matter what I say pertaining to this, because if the guys in a locker room don't forgive him, then you got a big issue, because the locker room is 80. Actually, I think they're a little less than 80% African-American. So these are important issues. And I think John Beilein has thankfully been spared. Let me first play you John Beilein's did he even really have to apologize? I guess we'll call it an apology. I guess maybe he had a little clarity, which is a smart thing to do. Here's Beilein about what happened.
First of all, I wanted to be clear out something that yesterday in a film session, I used a word that when I meant to say slug, the word thug came out. It was brought to my attention a couple hours later, called all the players afterwards, explained the situation. We met about it today. We apologized. I apologized about it today as well. Was not... never intended, and I think the players understand that now, but it's something I have to learn from and just enunciate better and be just more clear with what my intentions were. So they all know it, they understand it, but it's something that's unfortunate that we'll get behind us without question.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's obviously the classy thing to do. But I would even submit that he probably went a little bit too far. Something he has to learn from. What, by saying the wrong word by accident? I do it on the show all the time. You know? And here's the thing. I want to ask you a question. And I really only think there's maybe, let me see, certainly the one that I'm thinking of. Maybe another. Yeah, definitely one other. And that's probably it. Okay. Which NBA team has the most notorious reputation in NBA history? Which team is it? These, I'm going to give you a crack. Just in terms of being, we'll use the word thuggery, you know, the dirty, tough, whatever synonym you want to call it. Not that thug is, but whatever. Whatever word that describes that style of play. What would you say here?
There's bad boys.
The bad boys. Okay. Create the 30-30, 30-for-30, the bad boys, the Detroit Pistons, back-to-back champions. Now, if I also asked you a follow-up question, who was the, and you can insert several words here, who was the dirtiest player on that team? Who was the biggest thug on that team? It's a white guy.
Bill Laimbeer.
It's Bill Laimbeer. It's Bill Laimbeer. So that's why I didn't really feel the need to apologize if I'm Beeline. Yes, Mike.
I understand what you're saying, and I've thought the same thing, and I've heard the argument, like if you watch The Godfather, right? Like those old school mafiosos, they were known as thugs.
For
right?
sure.
So I understand the argument of like, okay, Laimbeer's white, thug. Capone and these Italian guys, the mafia, thug. The word, as many words have over the course of time and history, has taken on different types of meaning. Same thing with posse, mm-hmm. The way Phil Jackson used it. And while I do understand and I agree with what you're saying, I think for especially a lot of young African Americans, because of the way the term has been used in some media outlets and also just in everyday conversation, I think the word now has a different meaning, especially the way some of it's used in that term. Well, so I think the word has developed from the 80s.
I don't disagree. And by the way, it has a different meaning for the younger people, which we need to be aware of, for sure. I mean, listen, here's the one thing. You can't tell somebody else how to feel, you know. So it would be wrong for somebody who's older to tell, you know, a young African American basketball player, you have no right to be offended by the word thug. When really that young player, it's synonymous with a different stereotype. Totally get it. Totally get it. No doubt about it. Shaq chimed in on this. This was inside the NBA. Shaq had a really interesting perspective. Go ahead, guys.
If you have to be apologized to for your coach calling you thug, you ain't gonna never win. You're soft. Okay? Period. First of all, one, they're not playing like thugs, so I believe him when he said you're playing like slugs. And third of all, stop being so sensitive.
I grew up in the 80s. Would you be offended here?
I grew up in the 80s. I got called worse than slug. Trust me.
More than thug.
Yes. Trust me. Yes.
Okay, so that was Shaq, and obviously sits up there with Charles Barkley, and they had a little give and take. Here's Charles Barkley and Shaq.
When LeBron James has not been in Cleveland, in the last 10 years, they've never won. I think the magic number was 21. So to be complaining about a coach who's coming in trying to make y'all work on fundamentals when y'all stink, make y'all watch film, make y'all practice hard, this is starting to be a joke.
This was a move to try to get him released. Period. Whatever happened to what coaches say to us in the locker room stays in the locker room. How to get out? Who says something? And you're right. If you offend me in the locker room, coach, I got to go back at you.
Yeah, and you know, that part is wishful thinking. While I certainly subscribe to the sentiments, you know, being from the generation of Shaq, and more so Shaq than Charles. Charles is older than me, but I get it. It's still the same mentality. You know, what happens behind closed doors, we'll keep it behind closed doors. You know, but that's just unrealistic nowadays because it's just not going to happen. There's no way. There's just too many voices, too many different outlets, and too many sensitive people. And a lot of times those sensitivities are justified, fully justifiable, but sometimes they're not, you know. And when you speak to a room, and by the way, it's not just, there's not just, let's say, you know, 9 African Americans on the team and 2 like white Americans like Kevin Love, and there's also European. I mean, it's a melting pot. So you could probably further deduce that the word thug means something different to the Europeans. You probably could. You know, Shaq is from, and that's part of what makes Shaq and Charles and that the byplay on the show, Kenny as well. They are tapping into something that is, you know, quickly eroding, and that is a thick skin. You know, they say things, and they don't have a script. They don't have a net. When they fall, You know, sometimes they'll apologize, sometimes they won't. I'm talking about Shaq now and those guys and Charles. You know, Charles doesn't apologize. He's, you don't like it, tough, you know. I get it. Beeline has no juice in that building yet, no clout, no history, and really even independent of juice, which would be secondary to the deep, longstanding relationships to enough people that would know that he meant slug and not thug. That's what's one of the critical aspects here. So, you know, he apologized, and a lot of people had his back. You know, it's to me, it's a lot to do about nothing. I there's no way I'm holding. I'm not holding somebody's feet to the fire who misuses the word, who says the wrong word. I mean, our minds go in a million multitude of directions. And like I said, it happens to me when I'm doing the show. Not necessarily slug and thug, but you know, just gave you an example. Like in front of me, I've got a sound sheet with some of the sound, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Mike Vrabel. I got to cut some liners during the breaks for some affiliates. This is, I read this before, the 855-212-4CBS, our toll-free number. I've got Twitter up. I've got a couple of websites up, cbssportsradio.com. I've got my rundown for the entire show. I'm getting ready to talk to Taj Boyd, so I pumped up his stats from before. I've got the blast in front of me. I'll do that the last segment of the show. I got Ack, which is the biggest distraction in the entire world. Hello. Getting ready for his update. I got all sorts of different, you know, CBS sponsors coming up this weekend, the games. I've got to do something else. I got to do a radio.com sports minute, a CBS sports minute. I'm juggling. You know, when you say it, how many words do you think I say over the course of a 3,000 show? You see, I just did it there. I was thinking 3,000, but that's low on the low end. I'll take the over on that. Over a 3-hour show, how many words do you think I blab? A ton. You know, so. Yeah, when you're juggling, when you look at D-cells, when you mug, you look at it, Santa, cameras, microphone, this guy, I mean, laptop, you know, here's where we put the phone calls, my phone, my snack, my arm has hurt me today. You might make a mistake. Guy made a mistake. That's it. No? There's unforgivable mistakes.
I've heard my updates.
Yeah, nobody listens to your updates. See, somebody's calling me now. I forgot to turn my phone off. It's another distraction. And then there's mistakes where the context has to be illuminated. You have to reach into the well of sensibility and hope that rationale wins out. And, you know, I'm proud of us for this one because I think for the most part with Beeline, overwhelmingly, it certainly has. Let's get Axe update. We'll come back. Taj Boyd, little Clemson. We'll talk to him about that. Dabo. And the boys, Trevor Lawrence, the matchup coming up Monday with LSU and Joe Burrow. Axe update is right now. Here's Rich. This weekend, the NFL on CBS is home to the wild card divisional round Saturday night, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. The Titans try to shock the world again. They head to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. A little beat up. Obviously, Ingram is hurt. Their tight end, Andrews, has an ankle issue. He's questionable. And the top-seeded Ravens, though, ready to roll, you would think. It's going to be a lot of fun. Then on Sunday at 3 Eastern noon, Pacific, two of the game's elite young quarterbacks square off when Deshaun Watson and the Texans meet Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Both games begin with the NFL Today on CBS. Yeah, this is always a fun time. And, you know, we'll go from four games here to conference championship. We'll have the week off, Super Bowl. Teak and I are already booked. Santer's booked. We're going down to Miami, as we always do for the Super Bowl. A bunch of shows out there. We'll give you more details as we get a little closer. But we're also moving closer to the championship game, NCAA. And this one has all the makings of something really, really special. And get a chance to talk to a quarterback who was there during the formative years for Dabo Sweeney. And this guy was a weapon himself. He could throw it. He can run. 20 touchdowns combined on the ground as a runner, his junior and senior year combined. That will be Taj Boyd. Taj, welcome. We've had you on before. Tiki and Tierney, welcome back, buddy. How you been?
BT, what's going on with you, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm very good. It's, boy, you know, I'm sure you believed in Dabo, obviously. And you saw this wave or this pebble transform into a boulder, you know, slowly, slowly, slowly. But when you look back to, you know, 2010, 2011, when you first started with the Tigers, what was it about Dabo Sweeney that was unique, that was special? What separates him from the other coaches, do you think?
I think just his poise, his enthusiasm, and the belief that he has in himself. You know, I don't think that anybody could have achieved what he has if they weren't confident from the get-go. And when you look at him, his background, his story, I mean, you realize that in a way he was almost destined for this. And the same thing with Ed O. So, you know, rest in peace to the late Stan Lee. But if I had a chance to bend his ear, I would make a movie out of something like this because I think it's going to have that type of feel to it. I think it's going to have that vibe. And, you know, when that whistle blows, man, it's going to be something special.
Oh, but this is going to be incredible. It's going to be incredible.
You know what I'm saying on that? Like, it's crazy. I don't remember a game having this type of energy heading into it in a long time.
Well, let me ask you this, Taj. Go back to your awesome career in college. What was the game? Who was the – because I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Who was the quarterback – like, what was the top quarterback that you went to get, like, in a game of huge magnitude? Who was the other quarterback? I'm trying to remember. That jumps out to you, that you're like, that's the one that I really want to win, and I want to really outshine that guy. Anybody come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, we had an opportunity. So we started off my senior year with a banger against Aaron Murray in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
They were ranked 8, I think. We were ranked 5. About 4 weeks later, we go – which would, you know, end up being eventually the 2013 national champions, but it was Jameis Winston and his crowd at Florida State. And, you know, it was tough because we had beat some pretty solid quarterbacks over the years. And Mike Lennon's, I was even on roster and Russell Wilson was still at NC State, you know?
Yeah.
And so to see, you know, those type of emotions that go into it, especially when you look at Trevor Lawrence battling against Joe Burrow, you got a guy in Trevor who has never lost in college, and you got a guy with Joe Burrow who, you know, winning the Heisman isn't good enough. And he's carried and he's created this chip and he's cultivated it to the point where that has spread like wildfire throughout the program as well. So you got two on-edge programs who are literally going to leave everything out on the football field, and I hope it does build to the hype.
Oh, my God. I thought I was excited before we got you on the air. I'm even more excited as I'm talking to Taj Boyd. I didn't think that was possible. This is going to be awesome on Monday. And Taj, former Clemson star. You know, the and we had Dabo on. Mike, what was that, about 3 weeks ago, roughly, Coach Sweeney? Maybe about a month or so ago. And, you know, we obviously tapped into the Carolina game, which everybody looked at. Oh, they almost lost a two-point conversion, blah, blah, blah. And, listen, he's been playing this lack of respect underdog card very well. But let's be honest. I mean, you know, after a while, that's going to fade because when you just dismantle people and keep getting to this stage every year as they have, I mean, how much longer can he really ride that program that's getting shafted, that program that's not getting the respect that they deserve? Because I give them – I feel like they get the respect. I don't know where that's necessarily coming from.
Look, you can – he's going to be able to ride that as long as the players believe it, you know. And I think that's part of him being who he is and what he is. And to him, he's always a walk-on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, that's what he did. That's how he got to Alabama. It's the same thing with Tony Elliott. It's the same thing with Jeff Scott. It's the same thing with Brent Venables, Danny Pierman. A lot of the coaches are walk-ons. So they have a natural mentality and chip to the point where they feel like it's feast or famine. And so they're always trying to eat. And so when you got these top players coming in who have been in the comforts or has had the success throughout the course of their career in high school, you better believe once they step on campus, they're going to feel uncomfortable. And the coaches are going to make them that way for a reason because they want to see what they can get out of these players.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know what it takes, man. They know what it looks like. And I think that's what's special. You know, when he recruited me, it was unlike any other recruiting tactic that I had heard. And I think that's one of the things that separated him.
What made it different, Taj?
Well, so, you know, I was recruited by pretty much everybody.
Right? Yeah.
So I was down to pretty much 3 or 4. I was down to Rich Rodriguez when he was at Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was Chip Kelly and Mike Bellotti at Oregon. It was Jim Tressel and company over at Ohio State.
Mm.
And, you know, I was giving Bill Schneider and K-State a little consideration just because, you know.
Yeah.
It's Bill Schneider. You know, he's a legend.
No doubt.
And, you know, Coach Sweeney's walking in as Jim Tressel's walking out, and the first thing he says is, you know, I'm not Jim Tressel. I'm not Chip Kelly, Mike Bellotti. I'm not anybody. I can't tell you what I've done as a head coach because I haven't. He's like, but if you come here, you can do something special. And so he knew that these other coaches were going to tell me everything that I could be. And he went on the complete opposite of that and said, I don't know what we're going to be, but it could be something great.
Yeah.
He's like, I could be here. I may not be here, it really depends on what we do, man. So to be a part of that fabric and that foundation was the most special piece, and that's the chip that he embedded in us as a program. And now you got these other guys, and it's don't let your guys down beside you. You know, what these guys have built is nice, but it's not what you've done. So he's created this whole aura to the point where these guys are winning, they're sustaining success. His whole mentality has always been to be a consistent winner. And now you get it at a level where these guys don't even know what it feels like to lose, so they don't ever want to get that emotion tied in back to them. So it's pretty special, man, to see it done, because I've seen great programs throughout the course of my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But to see this run and where I think they're going, I don't know if we'll see another one that lasted this long for a while.
It's taken on a really long life. I don't know that I could disagree with that. We're talking to Taj Boyd, former Clemson Tiger, great Tiger royalty, two-time first-team All-ACC, 2012 ACC Player of the Year. Tua, I want to ask you about Tua. If you were him, you would have made the same decision, right? You would have jumped to the NFL at this point after the injury, or no?
Yeah, you would have to, man. I think it was inevitable. So I don't know why people thought it was a surprise or they were shocked by it. Look, man, you can only play this game for so long. And I tell you one of the things that Coach Swinney always tells us. He's like, this game, you know, ends really one of two ways. Either you get hurt or you end up not being good enough. So Tua's been hurt. He wants to try to build on some type of momentum that he possibly can, because we don't know what happens from 1 year to the next, but we do know he has an opportunity to maximize this time period right now.
Yep.
And whether he goes in the first round or whether he goes in the third, he's still going to have an opportunity. As long as he got that chance, he has a shot. And he's done everything he could at Bama, like legitimately. Like, he left no stone unturned. And I think it would be questionable if he hadn't had the success that he's had. I think that plays a lot into it, especially at that quarterback position. If we're talking wide receiver, if we're talking running back, it's a little bit different. But when you got a guy who's been, you know, behind enemy lines for so long, man, just getting, you know, attacks and sacks and everything else of that nature, and who has led in such a positive light, man, he's always been optimistic. He's always been real. I mean, you want to see a guy like that succeed and go out on top, and I feel like he has. You know, despite that injury.
100%. Taj, I got about 30 seconds-ish, maybe 40. Is your guy Deshaun Watson ready to go into Arrowhead and take out Kansas City? Is he ready? Well, let me – I know he's ready. Is what's around him ready?
You know, if Larry Mantonza could stop jumping off sides, man, that's all starting.
Be a good start,
you know, yeah. I think that, you know, especially when I watch him, I legitimately think that the Texans are a Super Bowl contender. You know, I think they have all the makings and all the pieces. I think the culture's even there, man. It's just, you know, in these games and in these situations, you know, when it's win or go home, I mean, those little details matter. So for those guys trying to get Will Fuller back healthy, I think that's huge, because, you know, the Chiefs, man, look, they're explosive. They can put up points. They can score. And so Deshaun and his team need all the weapons that they can spare in order to make sure they can combat that.
Clemson legend, man. Have a great time on Monday night. If you guys win the championship, and even if you don't, we'll get you on next year. But if you win, we'll get you back on at some point in the next couple of weeks so you can give a little more shine to the program, man. Have a great night on Monday. Should be awesome, Taj. Appreciate it, buddy.
Hey, Clemson by 10. I got you.
Ooh, okay. That, yeah, listen, I'm into the point spread. You know that. So I'm going to have to throw down some money. Is that what you tell me, Taj? 10 points? It's coming from somebody with bias, admittedly. You got to separate that. Of course, he's going to say Clemson's going to win, but he did give a specific number. That's interesting. I haven't made up my mind on that yet. D-Cell, who do you think is going to win? I kind of think LSU is going to. Like, I think LSU is going to win. That's what I think.
I'm going to say LSU in a one-score game.
Oh, boy, that would be tremendous. I just feel like, and I don't really. How many times have I used the word destiny on this show? Almost never. Like, I don't really. Not that I don't subscribe to that in certain aspects of my life, because I do. Although I certainly believe that you can help condense the trip to your destiny by doing certain things. I feel like I can't quantify this. I think Joe Burrow's destined to win. I don't know why. I don't know. Talk about that more on Monday for sure. Coming up, though, the Niners and the Vikings. Jimmy G, is he ready for the spotlight? Next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.